weren't you thrilled that the Pope Leo was American?
I was so shocked. I couldn't see straight. I was awed by that. And the other thing that's fun about it, you know, is you're talking about an American Pope. Well, he's not an American Pope, but he's an American Pope that has ties to Tulsa because he was the superior of the monks that run Cashel Hall. And he was their superior at two levels. At one time, he was superior of the Chicago province, which is where our Cashel people come from. So he was their provincial. And for 12 years, he was the world provincial in Rome of the Augustinian fathers. And what a lot of people don't realize, and this I think had a lot to do with his being elected, as the head of the Augustinian community in Rome, they have houses, schools or parishes or something, in 60 countries. And as the head of that community, he had to visit every one of those houses. And so as he told his cardinals, the third meeting he had with his cardinals, he looked at them and he said, "My brothers, I have been in most of your countries."
When you say houses, you mean countries?
Yes. When I'm by houses, I mean like Cashel Hall, the school, or if they had a parish.
And he'd been to them all.
Yeah, he had to. It was his job.
Did you ever meet him?
No, if he was at Ray Siegfried's funeral. At that time, he was superior in Chicago, so he well may have been. But there were so many priests, Augustinians, and priests from Notre Dame. I met a lot of people, but I don't remember them all.
Right.
And I may have met him then, but I don't remember it. So it would be unfair for me to say I know him. So we have an interesting story. You know, oh my gosh, an American Pope. Oh, an American Pope with ties to Tulsa.
Right.
Well, the young man that was just ordained, Father Williams, was a deacon at the North American College in Rome. And Vatican City puts out, the Holy Father will be saying Mass this place. We need deacons if anybody would like to volunteer to do it. So 3 weeks before he came home to be ordained a priest, he saw that the Holy Father was going to be saying Mass in St. Peter's Square for this holy year of the family. So he ran down to the sacristy at St. Peter's and signed up to be the deacon. So he ends up the deacon for that Mass. So before Mass, obviously, he's introduced to the Holy Father, and he says, "You know, Your Holiness, I'm Deacon Robert Williams, and I am from Tulsa, Oklahoma." And Leo looks straight at him and says, "Did you go to Cashel?"
Yeah.
You know, and you're going, the Holy Father's asking some kid if he went to Cashel Hall. I mean, he was like, "Hello?" And so Robert said, "No, I didn't go to Cashel. I went to the diocesan high school." He says, "Oh, you went to Kelly." So here's the Holy Father knows all about high schools in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's like, dear Lord, I never thought I would see that in my life. I never did.
Right.
Let alone an American Pope.
I don't know if there are other Protestants, I'm sure, like myself, were real taken with the Pope.
Yes. Oh, there's
my
a
house,
lot of you.
My house.
We're you real are taken everywhere. With the Pope. You are a multitude.
Right. Yeah. And even though we don't want to be a Catholic, we want to like the Pope.
Yes.
And we liked Francis.
Oh, you loved Francis.
Because he was so progressive.
Yeah.
And it's a feeling that Pope Leo may be the same kind of...
Very much the same, but a little more sophisticated in how he does it. Here's the difference. It's going to be very simple. Francis, his whole life, was an Argentinian. He was a Jesuit. He was educated as a Jesuit. He was head of the Jesuits in Argentina when he was 36 years old. He was head of the Jesuits during the Dirty War. He was, you know, and then he became an auxiliary bishop, and then he became the cardinal archbishop. But his whole life was in Argentina. So his whole approach to everything was kind of casual. And that was what just drove the Romans crazy. The Romans didn't know what to do with that. You know, they were so proper. Well, so I think that was part of that kind of ease that the Protestants really liked. It scared some Catholics because they thought, oh, he's going to say something, it'll be misinterpreted. I don't think we ever accused him of saying something that was wrong, but we always say he left himself open for misinterpretation more than other popes did. Well, you know, he was the first pope that wasn't raised in a world of nobility. even, you know, Benedict was raised in Germany. I mean, there was a sense of the old guard and all that. So they knew what being a nobleman was. So if you became the Pope, you became a nobleman. Francis had none of that. He was raised in Argentina. In that sense, he was an American. So when he got into all of that, he had no predisposition about how it should be, or never didn't think, well, I'm going to have to do that, because that's, he didn't have any of that. So he had a freedom that was wonderful. And that's what we all loved about him. Leo has been the head of the Augustinians internationally for 12 years. He's been a bishop in Peru, and he's been, for 2.5 years, he was a cardinal in Rome, running one of the biggest programs for the curia, they call it, the ruling of the church. So he's got lots of political moxie. He's got a lot of, he's brilliant, they say, in listening, understanding, pausing, and then deciding. So, and that wasn't what you saw in Francis. And part of Francis was Jesuits just say things to shake you up, to make you think. That's Jesuit. Mm-hmm. Well, Augustinians aren't that way. So it'll be different, but I think you'll find his theology will be very one-on-one with Francis. Francis is the one that made him a cardinal. Francis is the one that put him in charge of choosing bishops for the mm-hmm. entire church. Obviously, they knew each other very well. They met every single day. So I think it's a wonderful blend. You know, he's been able to do things that would have been common and comfortable for Benedict, and he's able to do things that are common and comfortable for Francis. I think he's going to be good for us.
And then he's called for full respect for humanitarian law and the crisis in Gaza. In messages around World Day of Migrants and Refugees, he described migrants and refugees as messengers of hope. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Pope's words carry much weight to the rest of the world just because he said that or addressed those issues?
I would like to think they do, because everybody at least hears them. And somebody said them. The poor man can't say anything that it isn't all over the world.
Right.
So they at least know that's what he thinks. The Roman Catholic Church has always been, at least in modern times, neutral politically, so that they're available to bring negotiations from either side. You know, it's why he meets with the Palestinian leaders. It's why he meets with those kind of things. And he is I know people don't understand that the Roman Catholic Church has a diplomatic program that has been functional in this world for over 900 years. And they have been a major source of diplomatic diplomacy for over 900 years. They are often the first door that's opened in negotiations. It's never noticed or acknowledged, but I know some of the people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important. And so what he says, you know, has to, yeah, he has to be careful how he says it, but he also has to make it very clear. You know, he's very clear. He is not for war. He is for peace.
Right.
And all of them have said that. You know, war no more, war no more, war no more, was Paul VI said to the United Nations, 55 years ago?
Yeah.
And it's, how effective is it? Who knows? But I think, too, Reagan was very good in understanding the role of the papacy.
Really?
And a lot of people don't understand that Reagan and JP2 were very much hand in hand in bringing down the wall.
All right, meaning President Reagan and
Pope John Paul II. Because remember, John Paul II was a bishop in Poland before he was the Pope. And he was, as a bishop in Poland, the Cardinal Archbishop of Krakow, actually, he was behind and in charge of the whole Solidarity movement in Poland. And the Solidarity movement in Poland is pretty much what brought down the Iron Curtain in Poland. But once he became the Pope, he had a whole other level of clout in reference to that. And he and Reagan worked hand in hand on that. A lot of people don't know that.
No, that's interesting. I interviewed Francis Rooney.
Oh, did you? Yeah. He was the papal ambassador to the Vatican. American ambassador.
He was the U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, to the Holy See for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was a cute story. The day he was going to meet the Pope, should I know which Pope that was? I probably should have.
It would have been JP2.
Okay, and his family was with him, and they weren't going to meet him, but they went with him, drove him, and were going to go meet the Pope. And so he said, I went in one room, and then I went into another room, and then finally the doors opened, and I walked in up to him, and he said, I couldn't speak a word. I couldn't say anything. I just couldn't say a word. And the Pope put him at ease, and Francis says, does that happen to other people? He says, oh yes, he says, it happens to other people. And the reason for them to meet, of course, was issues that Francis Rooney wanted to bring as an ambassador to the United States. Mm-hmm. They wanted for the Pope to know that we are concerned about these issues.
Yes.
But I thought that was kind of cute that he would.
His little old Catholic Irish heart could not speak. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. I've known Francis since he was very young.
Okay.
And I can see that happening very beautifully. There's also, and Francis probably wouldn't have told you this, Francis was smart enough to know that there is a certain hands-off to the United States, a little bit, you know, we're like an international power, but capitalism is not the most revered thing in Italy and so forth. And so he kind of knew that. So he decided that when he met with all the different cardinals, when he went to all the different dicasteries to meet all the people in charge, he would go in and he would say, could we please speak in Spanish? I'm much more comfortable in Spanish than I am Italian. Hmm. And of course, the cardinal was much more comfortable in Spanish than he was in English. And he said the atmosphere in the room just changed immediately.
Wow.
Because he had some sensitivity to another language. He had some sensitivity to them. He said it made his negotiations in the Vatican 5 times easier because he was willing to do it all in Spanish. And he's very fluent in Spanish.
Yeah.